email.
You're back listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR. You've just tuned in time for our interview with Samantha Florini, who is the head of policy at Digital Rights Watch. Welcome to the show, Samantha. To start off, we just want to discuss some of the measures and proposals that are being floated by the Albanese government and the eSafety Commission to tackle harm and misogyny online. But before we get into these, Samantha, what can you tell us about some of the work Digital Rights Watch does, and what are some of the important issues that you're attempting to tackle?
Yeah, thanks for that opening question. It's nice to get to talk about it. So Digital Rights Watch is a civil society organisation, and we exist to defend and promote human rights in the digital age. So anything that intersects with human rights and technology is usually where you'll find us. And we do all kinds of things like advocating for rights-respecting and socially progressive tech policy. We're, you know, out in the media talking about, you know, needing to uphold human rights when we're thinking about technology, and just generally trying to create more of a rights-respecting culture in Australia when we're thinking about, like, life online and the internet and so on. One of the big things that we're working on at the moment is pushing for federal privacy reform. This has been in the works for a really, really long time. And basically what we're calling for is for really significant changes to the Privacy Act, which hasn't been meaningfully changed since it was written in the 80s. So as you can imagine, a lot has happened between now and then. And so it's woefully out of date, and it's just like not protecting people and their data in, you know, in the digital age. So we've been pushing for that for a really long time. And it's actually feeds into a lot of other work in the online safety space. I think when we think about online safety, a key part of that has to be thinking about how platforms are extracting and using and monetizing people's data and exploiting that.
Yeah, thanks for that, Samantha. Just on to the next question. On May 1st, the Albanese government announced a suite of measures to address misogyny and online harm. And the first of these measures was a ban on the creation and non-consensual distribution of deep fake pornography. We just wanted to know what your perspective is on some of the issues and harms that the advent of generative AI potentially brings, and also just like focusing on the issue of deepfake pornography as well as other issues.
Yeah, of course. So for people who aren't aware of the terminology, deepfake material is basically content that's generated by way of generative AI, so being able to provide a prompt and then you get an image or a video in return. Often it is done using a lot of previous material, so you can feed in images of someone and then generate a picture or video of them in a different context or doing a different action. So when people are talking about deepfake pornography, they mean deepfake sexually explicit material. I'm really careful to try not to conflate that kind of image-based abuse with pornography, which is, you know, often created, or generally created in a consensual and, you know, in a consensual context. I think it's important to be distinguishing between that. In the same way as we wouldn't say child pornography, we'd say child sexual abuse material. So anyway, that's all context to understand what's happening. So at the moment, there is a bill that is in front of the House of Representatives, and it is seeking to criminalise the creation and sharing of deepfake sexually explicit material. Now, I think that it's a really important issue that does need some policy intervention. It does need to be addressed. This is already being weaponised against primarily women and gender diverse people, in a similar way to how image-based abuse has always been weaponized against people of marginalized genders. So I think the underlying issue is not new. It comes back to, you know, misogyny and harmful ideas around gender. But the technology has progressed so that now it's very easy to do this quickly and with low effort, and you can create quite convincing material. So I think it's, you know, I want to be careful to like stress that the underlying issue isn't new, but the technology is evolving, so it does warrant some intervention. I do worry about criminalizing things, of course. I think one of the flow-on effects of that decision is that, you know, you end up with children who are using this technology who then can end up facing imprisonment for it because of the age of criminal responsibility in Australia. So, like, that, the flow-on effects of that, I think, is not going to ultimately reduce harm. That's exacerbating harm. So I think we need to be thinking about different approaches to tackling these issues rather than just trying to, you know, criminalize things or ban things entirely.
Yeah, definitely. The second thing that has been proposed by the Albanese government, Samantha, is the introduction of age verification technology to restrict access to pornography, which some countries have already done or attempted to do. But however, experts are raising some criticisms about this measure from a range of different perspectives, but we wanted to have, you know, get your comments on some of the issues raised with age verification.
Yeah, thanks for asking that. It's an idea that pops up again and again over the years. People might remember that back in 2019, Peter Dutton floated the idea of a face scan to access pornography, and people reacted, rightly so, I think, really outraged by that because it represented such an invasion of privacy at like what is quite a sensitive moment for people, you know, to be watching pornography and engaging in that kind of sensitive content. A bit more background. So in 2021, the then coalition government pushed for a roadmap for the implementation of age verification. So, and ultimately what happened was the ALP government later decided not to move ahead with that. They looked at the recommendations from the eSafety Commissioner and they were like, this technology is not mature enough. It is rife with privacy and security risks and implementation issues. And so we're not going to go forward with it, which I think was a really sensible decision. Now that they've backflipped on that and decided to go forward with it. Nothing about the technology has changed. It's still rife with privacy and security risks. And on top of that, it's really, really easy to get around with something like a VPN. So it's not even necessarily going to be particularly effective, but they've decided to push ahead with it anyway. And I think it's a really, really problematic idea and a really troubling path to be going down.
Yeah, I was going to sort of, you know, ask about, you know, how it's linked to the issue of reducing online harm towards children. They have been, you know, called to implement the social media bans for children under 16 and what your comments were on that. But I was, you know, when you mentioned the VPN, I was sort of thinking of, it's sort of a similar moral panic back from, I was reading this article in Crikey about in 2007, when the Howard government rushed to put out this internet filter was put together by the Department of Communications, and it was made free and it cost $90 million. And that whole exercise, it was something that parents could like install in their house, in their home. And then the whole exercise was basically, it was just basically a huge fail because a 16-year-old bypassed the filter within 30 minutes or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, young people are really savvy when it comes to technology. So it's really ludicrous to think that they wouldn't be able to figure out a way to get past something like this. And I think you're right to point out that, you know, this is a really familiar moral panic around online pornography and also around social media at large, I think. You know, I think it's really troubling to see people so willing to accept the connection between, or the proposed connection between, online pornography and gender-based violence, because the research on that is actually really conflicted. And so we shouldn't be making such drastic policy decisions based on kind of assumptions and panic. In terms of the social media ban, or the proposal to try to ban children and young people from social media. This is, I think, an extension of the same logic of trying to ban them from pornography, or trying to prevent them from accessing pornography. It's a really short-sighted policy proposal, I think. And like I was saying before, it comes with just an incredible amount of privacy and security risks. Like, you know, I think everyone's acutely aware of what can happen when you're forced to hand over your, like, identity documents or forced to do, you know, a facial biometric scan, like the risks that come with data breaches or that being sold to other companies or you being able to be tracked around online. Like, people are aware of these things, right? And when you tie that to social media use or pornography consumption, it becomes really troubling. And I think just lastly, one thing I want to stress is that in order to implement something like this with social media, it would require everyone to prove their age to access social media. It's not just something that would impact young people, but everyone would have to go through this process, which means it's massively invasive and completely disproportionate to the purported benefits.
Samantha, thanks for speaking with us this morning. This is Zane. I'm just wondering, technology is allowing people to make deepfake, sexually explicit material very easily. Is technology also potentially part of the solution? Like, can someone report material like this to the eSafety Commissioner, and then there is some sort of computer program that looks for this stuff and scrubs it? And can platforms be compelled to get rid of material like this, and can particular corners of the internet that are hosting stuff like this be shut down? The whack-a-mole question, it's very difficult.
Yes, it is really difficult, and I think you're right to bring that up. One of the problems with taking sort of a content moderation approach is that you are constantly playing whack-a-mole, and the context and the cultural sort of setting is always going to be slightly different in different, you know, corners of the internet, in different countries and so on. And so one of the big ongoing challenges, I think, when talking about online safety is that, especially in Australia, we're constantly pushing for this kind of fixation on trying to remove particular content. And you can just never keep up. And what ends up happening is that, you know, you'll end up accidentally or, like, disproportionately taking down some content that actually might be okay. Like, for example, legal sex work material or, like, other sexual health material and stuff that gets sort of bundled up in that category but should be allowed to be online. But then, you know, anyone who's been online can also see that racism is rampant and that doesn't get taken down. So it's an extremely challenging approach to try to tackle these issues, and one that has failed again and again. And so I think the lesson from that is that Australia needs to be thinking less about trying to tackle individual pieces of content and more about how can we address the underlying business models and systems of these platforms that enable this kind of content to proliferate so widely and, you know, takes people down rabbit holes and, like, traps them in engagement algorithms showing more and more extreme content and things like that.
It's really interesting speaking with you this morning, Samantha. Unfortunately, we are running out of time, so if you'd like to add any final comments, particularly about maybe some of the issues and dangers associated with governments playing this kind of role in regulating content that is allowed on social media platforms.
Yeah, sure, and thank you so much for having me. I guess the final thing that I think is worth noting is that, of course, there are issues with social media. Like, I think, you know, anyone who's been on social media knows that instinctively. But I guess I caution or I bristle against the notion of trying to ban, children and young people entirely. You know, they also ought to have the ability to participate in modern life, and that's where it happens a lot of the time now. You know, I think a lot of conversations about online safety for children, the full suite of their rights kind of gets a little bit missed. Like, they also have the right to access information and the right, you know, freedom of expression and the ability to form communities. These things are important, and whether we like it or not, they happen on social media these days. And so when we take a really blunt approach, which it's a bipartisan issue now, like both parties are pushing for this. When we take a really blunt approach like that, I think we have to be considering what kind of additional harms could we be causing children and young people, especially those who might rely on the internet for community and access to information, like queer young people, for example. What harm are we causing them by taking such a blunt approach and trying to restrict them entirely?
Yeah, well said. Thank you once again, Samantha, for joining Green Left Radio on 3CR this morning.
Yeah, cheers.